Good morning. Today's Daf Megillah's Daf Test. We are on Ches Amud Beis. We are at the Upper Mishnah. We are going to be discussing Mitzarot today as our first topic of discussion. As we know, over the course of yesterday, today, a little bit tomorrow, so we're going to go off on tangents. The Mishnah is here. The second half of the first parak of Megillah is going to go through a series of. There's no difference between this and this, except for. And the reason why is because we had a Mishnah that started off this whole discussion that talks about the difference between Adar Aleph and Adar Beis, and there's relatively little difference between the two of them, except for Mikra Megillah. Okay, we also came to learn afterwards that that's one Shita. There are two other Shitas on the issue in terms of which is the primary Adar. Is it Adar Aleph or is it Adar Beis? But meanwhile, so it allowed the Mishnah to launch into a lot of tangents in that. So this is not the only area in halacha where there are minor differences between this and this. And so the Mishnah now is going to do a compilation of 13 different topics in which there are minor subtle differences between this and this. And so these are the Mishnahs of Ein Bein, I think 13 in total. So yesterday we launched into a series of other discussions and other topics since that Mishnah. Since we began, this takes us all the way back to Zayin Amud Beis. So the Mishnayos have covered the difference between Yontif and Shabbos, the difference between Shabbos and Yom Kippur, the difference between being Mudar Hanah versus Mudar Meichel, the difference between Nadarim and Nadavos, the difference between a Zav who is Roeh Shtei Re'ios versus a Zav who is Roeh Gimel Re'ios. Okay, so we're literally all over the place. And so with that in mind, so we continue now to go all over the place. As we delve into other areas of halacha. So over here now for the first part of today's daf, I'm going to go a little bit quicker this morning in that we're a little bit behind and I do want to get caught up. So we're going to be discussing now the halachas of Mitzorah. So what I'd like to do is I'd like to give a lengthy introduction to Tzaras, and over here, not a lengthy introduction, a really short introduction to Tzaras, a really crash course in that if you are a Mitzorah, so either you are mukhlat or muskar. Mukhlat means that definitively, meaning that you are you have the clear symptoms of being a mitzora, and as a result of that, now you are going to be sent out of the machaneh, and you cannot come back until you are totally cured. And then there's going to be a tahara process because as a mitzora, you're tummy. As part of the tumah of a mitzora, so not only does everything you touch going to become tummy, but there's also what's called tumas bia, which is an unusual tumah, does not exist elsewhere, in that if you walk into a house, so all the contents in the house are going to become tameh. So there's an assortment of halachas regarding a mitzorah mukhlat. There's also something called a mitzorah muzgar. Mitzorah muzgar, which if you go through the psukim in the Torah, so you will read that sometimes the symptoms would indicate that you're a mitzorah, but you're going to be quarantined, sequestered for 7 days, and then you're going to be re-examined. And so if it turns out that you're a in fact it's tumah, so now you are considered a mukhlat. So differences between mitzorah muzgar and mitzorah mukhlat, that's what we're going to be discussing right now in our Mishnah. Ein bein mitzorah muzgar le mitzorah mukhlat ela priyo frima. So the differences between being a definitive mitzorah, that's mitzorah mukhlat, versus being a suspected mitzorah, that's a mitzorah muzgar, is only priyo frima. Priya is to, I'll just say it simply, let your hair grow. That's not the only pshat, but right now that's what I'll offer as a pshat. And prima is that you have to do a kriya on your clothing. Okay, it's like kriya. There are, again, subtle differences between kriya and prima, but for our purposes right now, just simply say you tear your clothing. So that has to be done by a mitzorah mukhlat. It does not need to be done by a mitzorah muzgar. Ein bei tahor mitoch hezgal tahor mitoch hechlet ela teglachas vitziparim. Now, in terms of the tahor process, so what are the differences between Mitzorah Muzgar and Mitzorah Mukhlat? So it says the Mishnah that the differences are going to be Tiglachas, the requirement to shave the body, and Tziparim and the birds. In other words, they're going, again, open up to the beginning of Parshas Mitzorah if you want a full description of what exactly the Tahara process is. For our purposes right now, just suffice to say that it is an involved process that includes the shaving of your body and the bringing of the birds. That only needs to be done by Mitzorah Mukhlat, not by Mitzorah Muzgar. Okay, so what do we come to learn? We come to learn the differences between them. We're going to keep doing this again and again. Once we know the differences, so therefore we also can deduce the similarities. So what are the similarities between them? So that's exactly where the Gemara starts the discussion. Haling is shiluach v'tumah ziv ezeh shavin. So vis-a-vis the requirement of shiluach to be sent chutz lamachne. And remember, when it comes to the mitzvah, he has to go out of gimel machanos, right? Go back to the encampment in the midbar. So the Mishkan is Machane Shechina, where the Levim are located. That's Machane Leviya, and the rest of Klal Yisrael is Machane Yisrael. So there is a whole series, a whole schedule of who needs to be sent out of where, depending on what kind of tumah they have. And we know the Mitzora, so he is the most outed, so to say, outside of the community where he has to go Chutz Gimel Machanos. So this halacha of Shiluach applies both for the Mitzora Muzgar and for the Mitzora Mukhlet as well. So Menahani Mili, so now what we're going to be doing now for the remainder of this sugya is just the drashas. In other words, all the information is there, and now it's just a question of how did we arrive at this information. So Deniv Rav Shmuel Bar Yitzchak Hamid Rav Huna V'Tiara Kon Mispachasi V'Chibes Begadav V'Taher. So the Torah in describing now, the psukim being cited over here are relative to a Mitzora Muzgar. So the Kohen is going to be metar him. It is a mispachas, and he's going to be cleaning his clothing, meaning that he'll tovel it, and v'tiher, and tahor mi prima demi'ikara. And v'tahir is telling us that not only is he tahor now, but retroactively, meaning he did not have to do priya prima. So amale rava, so that's a drasha. So the drasha is based on the word v'tahir coming to tell us that it's not a new tahara, but rather it's retroactive in that he never needs to do priya prima. That's the drasha. So amale rava lameata gabi zav dechsi v'chibes begadav v'tahir. So really we have the same construct, the same syntax used in the context of a zav, in that he is not only now tahor, but he also previously was tahor as well. So what does that mean? How some my vitahir mi kariika? What kind of pshat are we going to offer as it relates to the zav? So ela tahor ashta melatamik licheres beheset afagav dahadur chazi lametam lemafreya. So what it means is that look, once he tovels in the mikvah, meaning the zav, so he's no longer going to be metame beheset. Tumas heset is something specific and unique to a zav, in that when he causes something to move, it will become tamei. And so what the Torah is telling us is that once he tovels in the mikvah, so it no longer he's no longer going to be metame beheset. But that's only from this point going forward, not retroactively. So hachinami, tahor hashem latame bebiya lemafreya. So over here, when it says v'tahir regarding the mitzora, what it means is that once he goes through the tahara process, so now he's no longer going to be metame bebiya, but only from this point going forward. It's not speaking about retroactively. So, okay, good. So so far attempted to do is to provide the drasha that teaches us that a mitzora muzgar does not need to do priya prima. We so far have, we had one attempt. It was not a successful attempt. Here we go now with the second attempt. Ela merava mehachavat sarua asher bo hanega. So the sarua, meaning the mitzora, who had the tsaras, meaning the nega over here is a description of the actual skin affliction. So misha tsaras atuluya begufo. So who is required to do priya prima? Only where your tsaras status is connected to the actual skin affliction. But the mitzora who was sequestered. Now, granted, he's sequestered because he is demonstrating some symptoms of tsaras. But in other words, but right now his status is going to be a predicate of the fact that you need to quarantine. So his tumah is really going to be a function more of him being sequestered rather than the actual skin affliction itself. So Amalei Abaye Lameyata Kol Yimei Asher Anega Bo Yitma Misha Tzaras Tatuli Begufa Hatan Hu Detan Shiluch Vishin Tzaras Tatuli Begufa Ein Tan Shliach. So the Gemara says, now wait 1 second. So if that is the drasha, so the Gemara says, so I'll just complement that with another drasha. Notably, that it sounds like from the Pesukim that who needs to be sent out? Only the mukhlat, meaning the mitzora, whose saras is going to be based on the discoloration of his skin. But it sounds like if you have a mitzora muzgar, he does not need to be sent out. V'chite ma'achinami, now maybe you'll tell me, okay, so that's right. The Gemara says, but it's not right. V'haktani ein be mitzora muzgar l'mitzora mochlat, ela priyo prima, hala inya shiluach ulitmuye bebiya zivizeh shavin. Yeah, but that's exactly where we started off our whole discussion. Meaning just read our Mishnah and then just go with the inference from the Mishnah. The Mishnah taught us that a mitzara, musgar, muskar, mitzara, mukhlat are different as it relates to priya prima, which also means deductively that it's the same regarding shiluach. So it can't be a correct conclusion. So amarle yemei, kol yemei, l'rabbos mitzara musgar l'shiluach. So the Gemara says, okay, so we'll say like this. We'll maintain the previous drasha, but as far as shiluach is concerned, we have a counter drasha for shiluach, meaning the mitzara musgar is going to be sent out because it says yemei and it says kol yemei. And we know that anytime you see the word kol, so it allows for a inclusion. So we're including the musgar. So ihachi teglachas vitziparim, so my time alone. So the Gemara says, if that's true, so what about the tahara process? So diktani ein ben tarva mitoch hezgol atar mitoch echlet ela tiklachos v'tziparim. So the Gemara says, look, once we have a ribui, and once we're including the mitzvah muzgar, that he's going to be sent out, so then maybe as far as the tahara process is concerned, maybe they should also be on equal footing with one another. Yet we know that's not true because our Mishnah taught us that regarding the tahara process, the mukhlat has to go through the entire detailed sequence of the tahara process, and the musgar does not. So the Gemara says, "Amar Rabbi, Amar Kra, v'yatsa kohen amechutz machaneh, v'hinei nirpan nega hatzaras, misha tzaras t'tluya berefus, yatsa zeh, shein tzaras t'tluya berefus, ela b'yamim." So again, the Gemara says, yeah, but we have a counter drush as well, meaning that the Torah tells us that the only one has to go through the detailed tahara process is only somebody who needs an actual refuah, meaning when it comes to the muzgar, so he's just being quarantined, meaning he is demonstrating some signs of tzaras, but wait and see. And what happens is that after 7 days, we're going to wait and see, and we'll see whether or not the symptoms get worse, they get better, they maintain a second quarantining, et cetera, et cetera. But the tahara process is only for somebody who was definitively declared to be a mitzvah. So only that person needs to go through the detailed tahara process. Okay, a detailed description in the Gemara regarding where we generate all these halachas from. Meaning, in terms of the organization of the Gemara, it's really straightforward in that these are the differences between a mitzvah musgar, mitzvah mukhlat, which also deductively means that these are the similarities. And then the Gemara just simply went through, where do we see this in the psukim? How do we darshan the psukim to arrive at that conclusion? Next. Ein bein sfarim l'tfilin mezuzos el asher sfarim nechtavim becholoshon u'tfilin mezuzos ina nechtavim el asheris. So, the difference between sfarim and tfilin mezuzos. Now, when we say the word sfarim, look at Rashi over here. Rashi right in the Mishnah. Rashi says, Torah Nevi Maksuvim, meaning we're talking about the gamut of Tanakh. So, as far as the difference between all of Tanakh versus Tefillah Mezuzah, is that Sfarim could be written B'chol Lashon. Okay, right, rather striking statement of the Mishnah, in that a Torah is going to seemingly have the Kedusha Sefer Torah, even if it's not written B'Lashon HaKodesh. Okay. Really striking, meaning, obviously, for those who do not speak Hebrew, it is extraordinarily helpful to read a translated version. In fact, this daf today is going to be the daf that talks about translation of the Torah, and we will be learning a little bit later this morning in terms of whether that's a good thing, bad thing, all coming up in today's daf. Really, really interesting daf in terms of translation. But it's striking in that what the Mishnah is seemingly saying is that if you write a Sefer Torah, Bishar Lashonos, in another language, it's going to have the Kedusha of a Sefer Torah. Okay. Okay, wait. We have a lot to cover, and then afterward.
It's another language with Hebrew letters.
We're getting there. We're going to go through all of it. Okay, so but when it comes to tefillah mezuzos has to be written b'lashon kodesh. Rav Shimon Gamliel Omer. Now, Shitas Rabbi Shimon Gamliel is that a Sefer Torah can only be written in one other language, and presumably, by the way, he's also referring to the other Sfarim as well. So, meaning all Sefer Tanakh can only be written in one other language, and that is Greek. Meaning, according to Rashbag, you could write a Sefer Torah in other languages, but in terms of it having the Kedusha Sefer Torah, so it only will have the Kedusha, only if written in one other language other than Lashon Kodesh, and that would be Lashon Yevanis, only in Greek, for reasons which we're going to explain at the end of the sugya, what he thinks is so exciting and special about Greek. Okay. Ha! So again, everyone here knows what's going to happen. So we talk about the differences, so that by deduction tells us what the similarities are. And so here the Gemara tells us. So halatov from begidim latame es yadayim zevizeh shavim. So vis-a-vis where they're the same, so there's a requirement of tfir begidim. In other words, when you stitch together various yerios, various columns of the Sefer Torah, so it has to be stitched with gidim, with sinews of an animal. And also latame es yadayim. And also, this is an issue that we touched on just a couple days ago in the daf. And we know that once a sefer has a status of a sefer, so that means to say that once you touch it with your hands, it's going to be metamis yadayim, and you'll make your hands a sheni latoma. As we already pointed out numerous times, it seems odd that of all the things that are going to be a source of tuma, a sefer is going to be a source of tuma. But again, go back to the Gemara and Shabbos, daf yadalad. I'm sure we explained a little bit better back then. For our purposes right now, let's just... It just accept that that's the halacha. Okay. So what David just pointed out, Rashi over here, if I can highlight, so really interesting Rashi, where Rashi says that as far as stitching with Gidin, so Rashi says it would be true by tefillin, it would also be true by mezuzahs as well. Okay, the mezuzah is a single column with two paragraphs written on it. And it can be stitched with Gidin. So what's right? That Rashi is really interesting and needs much more clarification in terms of what kind of stitching are we talking about? Meaning by tefillin, so, right, you can make the argument that it's, you know, it can get a little bit long. But by mezuzah, it's really strange that even the suggestion is that, yeah, you could go ahead and stitch it. Stitching what? So, okay. So it's a...
When you stitch it, you touch it. It's not complete yet.
They're two separate halachas.
No, but why is it tuma? Aren't you tuma? Once you stitch, you touch it, you touch it.
Two separate halachas. In other words, now you're conflating the two points. Meaning, one is that when you stitch it, you're going to be stitching it with Gidin. No, and number two...
Good,
so your hands are going to become tummy. Okay, good. All right, Usfarim nechtavim b'chol lasha. Now, as far as farm are concerned... So Sfarim can be written b'chol lashon in any language. Viri minu. So the Gemara now starts off the discussion. It's going to be a lengthy discussion now coming up in the Gemara regarding the ability, the allowance to write a Sefer Torah in other languages. So the Gemara says, let me share with you a b'raisa. So the b'raisa reads, Mikra, shekasu targum v'targum shekasu mikra, uksav ivri, eino mitame ese yadayim achiech tevenu, biksav ashuris, ala sefer uvidyo. So the Bryce over here says in really, really clear terms that as far as the Sefer is concerned, so and again, we don't know what the Bryce is making reference to, what kind of Sefer we're referring to, but if it is Targum that was written in Mikra, now Targum over here is meaning the Aramaic language, or if it was Mikra written in Targum, again, we're going to try to be clear about that in just a moment, or if it was written in Ksav Ivri, Ksav Ivri, is another language. I think in English they translate as Phoenician, whatever it may be. So it's not going to be Metamis Yadayim until you write a Biksav Ashuris. You have to be writing it in Lashon HaKodesh, Ala Sefer Uvidyo. So now, what comes out from this Braisa is that that Shinui Lashon, that if all you're doing is going to be changing language, so it does not have the status of a Sefer. And that is totally unlike our Mishnah. Meaning, our Mishnah says that Sfarim are nechtavim b'chol lashon, that Sfarim can be written in any language. So what you have over here is a stira between the Mishnah and the Braisa, and that's really strange. So the Gemara is going to try to suggest answers. We start off with the answer of Rav Amar Rav Lo Kasha. So Rav says, okay, so maybe we could suggest the following. Kan, as far as the Mishnah is concerned, so that's begufan shalanu, meaning our Mishnah is talking about where you're writing another language, but the lettering... So the lettering that you're going to be using is, you're going to be using Lashon Kodesh, you're going to be using Hebrew block letters, okay? If I may, right, for all those of you who know, I'm not one of them, Yiddish. Okay, so Yiddish is a fantastic example where if you ever see them writing out Yiddish, so, this is, again, I don't speak the language, so, right, but Yiddish is a perfect example where it's another language, but it's written in Hebrew block letters. So that would be our Mishnah. And meanwhile, Kanva, as far as the Brace is concerned, Begufan Shalahen. Meaning not only is it being written in another language, but the lettering that's used is not the Aleph-based lettering. Okay, so that right now is Rava's attempt to be miyasha between the Mishnah and the Braisa. So this answer, good. So Amar le Abaye b'mayu kimtalahi. So Abaye says, what kind of answer is that? So meaning, as far as the Braisa is concerned, begufan shalahen. So as far as gufan shalahen, meaning you're using other lettering. So my area mikra shakasu targum, targum shakasu mikra. So then, why would the Braisa have to go on to describe now other languages? So I feel a mikra shakasu mikra targum shakasu targum nami the haktani ashech devenu asheris ala shiris. Meaning, if you're writing in the Hebrew language, but you're using other lettering, so then it's going to be puzzle. The Braisa doesn't have to go on to a case where I'm writing in other languages. Even if I'm writing in Hebrew, but I'm using other lettering, it's no good. How do I know that? Because the Mishnah says, Ashichtavenu Ashuris ala Sefer Vidyo. You have to use Ashuris. Ashuris is the Hebrew block lettering. So the Braisa is passing the bigger chiddush in order to give me a case which once we know the bigger chiddush, so then the Bryce's example would be obvious. Okay, elalokasha. Okay, so that was our first attempt. Okay, we're passing on our first attempt. Meaning, so we have a steer between the Mishnah and the Bryce. The Mishnah says that it can be written in any language. Sfarim can be written in any language, and the Bryce says it can only be written in Lashon HaKodesh. And right now we are an impasse. So the Gemara is going to make more attempts. So elalokasha ha. As far as the Mishnah is concerned, that is shitas rabbanan. That's the chachamim that says they can write in any language. And ha kareb Shimon Gamliel. And as far as our Braisa is concerned, the Braisa is going like Shimon Gamliel. So the Gemara says, Rav Shimon Gamliel haika yavanis. The Gemara says, well, wait one second. Rav Shimon Gamliel is limiting. That part's true. But Rav Shimon Gamliel does allow for it to be written in Greek. So if the Bryce is going like Rishim and Gamliel, so why is the Bryce saying just Hebrew, meaning Greek as well? So Elokasha, the Gemara says, okay, so we're passing on that answer. So let's try again. So the Gemara says, Kam b'Sfarim, Kam b'Tfilin Mezuzos. Maybe the difference could be that our Mishnah is talking about Sfarim. The Bryce is talking about Tfilin Mezuzos. The Gemara says, Tfilin Mezuzos, my time, Mishum Dichziv Behu, Behaviasan Yehu. So the Gemara says, as far as Tfilin Mezuzos is concerned, why? Meaning, why are we now limiting? Meaning, if a sefer can in fact be written in any language, so why should Tfilin Mezuzos be allowed to be written in Lashon HaKodesh? So we have a drasha. So it says, Behu. I'm sorry. It says Vehayu. Thank you. So it says Vehayu. Vehayu had devarim ha'ela. So Behaviasan Yehe. So Vehayu is coming to tell me that it can only be written as is. So the Gemara says, okay, so my Targum Shikasva Mikra Ika. So the Gemara says, well, if that's true, so now let's consider. Because what did the Braisa say? It's Targum Shikasva Mikra. Okay, what if I took Aramaic words and I wrote them in Hebrew? Now, Bishlama Torah Ika Igar Sadusa. Now, if we were talking about a Sefer Torah, so then I can give you a number of examples. The Gemara here just gives us one. So Yigar Sadusa, so when Yaakov and Lavan were making a peace treaty with one another, so where were they? So the Torah describes it as a place called Yigar Sadusa. And by the way, the Torah right there says, oh, by the way, if you and I want to know what it is, it's called Galed. Neither locations help me. But in other words, but the Torah is written in Aramis, and it's written also in Lashon HaKodesh as well. So good. So then I understand that if I were to write a Sefer Torah and I took Yigar Sadusa, instead of writing that, I wrote it in Hebrew. So, which, by the way, would be really strange because the Torah itself also then just gives me the Hebrew. But at least there's an example. But Elahacha, but now that you're telling me that the Braisa is talking about Tefillin Mezuzos, so where in Tefillin Mezuzos do we have examples of where it's Aramaic? And instead of Aramaic, I wrote in Hebrew. So the Gemara says, my Targumika. Okay, so obviously now that's also difficult as well. We're struggling. Meaning so far today, what we're looking to do is try to bridge the difference between the Mishnah and the Braisa. The Mishnah says it's fine, can be written b'chol lashon. The Braisa says it can only be written in Lashon HaShuris, in Lashon HaKodesh. And now what we're still struggling to do is how do you explain the difference between them? And a number of suggestions have been given. And so far, not yet. So Elokasha, kam b'Megillah, kam b'Sfarim. So as far as the Braisa is concerned, the Braisa is talking about the Megillah, meaning Megillah Sester. Okay. And as far as the Mishnah is concerned, it's the other Sfarim of Tanakh. Okay. So Megillah Maitaima. That's really strange. Now what we're saying together is that as far as the Megillah is concerned, Megillah can only be written as is. Right? Of all the Sfarim of Tanakh. Reminder the Sefer that just a couple of days ago was on the bubble in terms of whether it was written B'Lashon HaKodesh, not written B'Lashon HaKodesh, according to some Shitas, not canon, not part of Tanakh. That one, that Sefer, can only be written in Lashon HaKodesh. Okay, that just, I'm highlighting that this is a really strange position. And meanwhile, the Gemara now, full defense of this position. So Megillah my time. So let's analyze this a little bit better. What's behind Megillah? So dechziv ba kich savam vechel shornam. Right, lengthy discussion, by the way, in terms of the citation of which pasuk in the Megillah that we're referring to over here. Our girsa and our Gemara kich savam vechel shornam. Regardless, it could be kich savam vechizmanam. Point is as follows: it has to be written kich savam. Now, again, if you look at the pasuk pshat in the psukim, doesn't sound like it's talking about the actual Megillah itself, but still, and that's why some have the gear says kich savam v'chizmanam. Regardless, the point is that it has to be kich savam, as it is. Okay, now, what we're saying right now, and the Gemara seems to be accepting, is that here's the difference between the Mishnah and the Braisa. The Mishnah is talking about Shar Sfarim of Tanakh, right? The other 23 books of Tanakh, and the Braisa is talking about the 24th, meaning the Megillah Sester. Right, my numbering, by the way, is not chronology. Just whatever. Just 23 verses 1. Okay, so so what comes out now is that the Megillah has to be written in B'Lashon HaKodesh. And now we're gonna be able to say Pshat in the Braisa as well, because remember what the Braisa say? That you know those Aramaic words that are there, they must be kept in Aramaic. So my targum shekasu mikra yika samer of papa v'nishba piska mamelach Rav Nachman Yitzchak Amar v'chol hanashim yitnu yikar leva aleihem. So the Gemara gives two examples, right? I really think there are more, but there are two. The Gemara gives two examples of Aramaic words that you're going to be finding in the Megillah. First of all, the word pitgam. Okay, that's the Gemara assumes that that's not Hebrew. Also, the word yikar, right? Yikar is Aramaic for kavod. Okay, the Gemara also assumes that that's an Aramaic word. Okay. Fine. So so that is all but one approach. So after a pretty lengthy discussion in the Gemara right now, we have a steer between the Mishnah and the Braisa. So right now the Yish of Hadvarim is that the Mishnah is talking about Shar Sfarim, the Braisa is talking about the Megillah. That's all but one approach. The Gemara now goes on to offer a second suggested approach. Rav Ashi Amar Kitanya, as far as the Braisa is concerned, that it must be written Biksav Ashuris. So that's Bishar Sfarim. That is the rest of Nevi'im Ksuvim. And as far as the Braisa is concerned, as far as all the other Sfarim are concerned, meaning both the Nevi'im and Ksuvim, so that's talking about Shar Sfarim. And the Rebbe Yehuda, and going like the Shita of Rebbe Yehuda, meaning as we're going to see in just a moment, D'Tanya. Tefillin Mezuzah say Nechtav Mel Ashuris. So as far as Tefillin Mezuzah is concerned, so it can only be written in Ashuris. Fine. And Rabbi Seinu Hitir Yevanis. Now, as far as Rabbi Seinu is concerned, Rabbi Seinu, as we already now know, that's Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, so he allows you to write it in Greek. So the haksi value. So the Gemara says, Ela Ema, Sfarim Nechtavim Bechol Lashon, V'Rabbi Seinu Hitiru Yevanis. So the Gemara says, wait 1 second, we're just going to do a quick editing of the Braisa. The Braisa is talking about Sfarim are Nechtavim Bechol Lashon, meaning not Tefillin Mezuzos, and Rabbi Seinu allowed it to be written in Greek. Mechlal de Tanakama Aser. Now, it sounds like if the Rabbi Seinu are allowing Greek, so it sounds like the Tanakama should be taking the standpoint of being usser, meaning if Rabbi Shimon Gamliel is giving us heter, Tanakama should be giving us isser. So Ela Ema, so the Gemara says again, another quick edit of the Braisa. So Rabbi Sinu, lo hitiru she yichtavu Ela biyavanus. Oh, okay, fine. So we're cleaning up the language, so now it comes out well. In other words, the Tanakama says that you can write in Shar Lashonos, and Rashbag, Rabbi Seinu, meaning Rashbag, says they could write it in Greek. So far so good, meaning everything we just said we knew already. We're only bringing this for the next line, which is the Shita of Rabbi Yehuda. V'tanya, I'm Rabbi Yehuda. Afka Shita Rabbi Seinu. Yevanus lo etira ela sefer Torah mishamaisa tatamai amelach. Even when the Rashbag allows for Greek to be substituting Hebrew, that's only for the Sefer Torah and for no other Sfarim in Tanakh. Oh, okay, fine. So now what comes out now is that we have a refined viewpoint of the Shita of Rashbag, meaning this is Rabbi Yehuda's viewpoint of the Rashbag, which is that even though he allows for Greek, that's only for the Sefer Torah, but for no other Sfarim. Oh, that comes out, and now comes out to mean that even according to the Rashbag, according to Rabbi Yehuda's viewpoint, Nevi'im and Ksuvim can only be written in Lashon HaKodesh. Oh, okay, good. Now we go back to the Braisa. Now we understand. Now we have a second approach in the Braisa, meaning the steer between the Mishnah and the Braisa. The Mishnah says that you could write in all other Sfarim, you could write Sfarim in all other languages. The Braisa says only Lashon HaKodesh. So remember, when we first offered that maybe that's the Rashbag, we said, oh, yeah, what about Greek? Now that we have Rav Yehuda's version of the Rashbag, now we know how to answer that question. Because even Rashbag's allowance for Greek is only for Sefer Torah and not for other Sfarim. And the Braisa was talking about other Sfarim. Okay, good. So that now provides for us our second approach. Now, why does Rav Yehuda think that Rashbag allows for Greek only by Sefer Torah? Because of Maisa de Tamai HaMelech. Okay, Tamai HaMelech. So King Tami. So who was he historically? Rashi gives us precious little information. Rashi just simply says that he was an Egyptian king. So presumably we're talking about sometime during Baisheni. That's about as much as I can help in terms of giving some sort of historical context. David, does he speak a little bit?
Ptolemy Philadelphia, 246 to 285 BC.
Okay. Good. So I was right about Baisheni. And then, okay, fine. All right, Ditanya. So we learned in a braisa, Maisa Batami Amalach Shekinei Shivim Vishnaim Zekenim. So the story now, the Gemara goes through in some detail, in that we are now talking about the Targum of the Torah. Okay, in scholarly worlds, it's called the Septuagint. And so here we are now with the genesis of the Septuagint. So there were 72 that were collected, Vichnisim Vishivim Vishnaim Bebatim. And they were placed in 72 different locations, Velogila Hem Amakin Sam. Now, why they were collected? So they weren't told why. So what I want you to do is I want you to write the Torah, but I don't want you to write in Hebrew. I want you to write in the Greek language. And I will say, with only just a small amount of sarcasm, the greatest miracle in the history of mankind, and that is that the 72 agreed to what is going to be the pshat in the Torah. And they all wrote the same Torah. Now, the whole purpose of Tami doing so was to expose, meaning they can't agree to what the Sefer Torah is written. And how can you have a religion that's predicated on everybody giving their own interpretation of the Torah? That was his goal. That was his plan. And so the nace was that when each one of them wrote a translation, a Greek translation of the Torah, so they all wrote the exact same thing. So now, examples. Now, is the Gemara now about, Gemara's about to give us a list of the various translations that they put in, and so that there would be no kind of corrupt look at the Torah, meaning hashkafically. Some psukim in the Torah give us a slightly challenging look at the Torah hashkafically. And so what they did with their translation is that they smoothed it over. Now, again, we know we have Torah Shebaal Peh, And you could just look at Mefarshim and the Chumash, and all the issues that they deal with are dealt with the Mefarshim. But if all you're working with is a translation, so the translation's got to do all that work, meaning it give the explanation into the translation. And so we're going to be going over a number of examples. Is this an exhaustive list? I do not know, but it's a pretty long list. I mean, long relative to the amount of time the Gemara is going to be spending altogether, but it's a pretty long list of examples. So we're going to go through all the examples here given the Torah. So first of all, we start off number one with the first pasuk in the Torah. It opens up. We all know Bereishis bara Elokim v'shamayim v'sa'aretz and Elokim bara Bereishis. So what they do is that they adjust the wording. Now, by the way, interesting. We're obviously getting the Hebrew version of it, meaning right because. Speak for myself, don't speak Greek. So, in other words, what the Gemara is doing is giving us what it would sound like in Hebrew if you retranslated it back from Greek to Hebrew. So, Elokim bara Bereishis. Okay, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu created, meaning Bereishis bara Elokim could be misinterpreted as this entity Bereishis bara Elokim. Okay, so what they did is that they flipped it around. Okay, that's one example. Okay, Pasuk says, Vayomer Elokim, I'm just going through the psukim first, so you can appreciate like what they're doing. Pasuk says, "Vayomer Elokim Naaseh Adam B'tzalmenu Kedmusenu," and so Naaseh, so let us, right, plural. Or plural. So who are we talking about? So right, in other words, again, that is a right hashkafically, that is it's a avodah zarah to interpret the pasuk kipshuto. So therefore, Easeh Adam B'tzalem Uchidmus. So Easeh Adam, right? B'lashon Yachid, not B'lashon Rabim. Okay, it begs the question, meaning what is pshat in the pasuk when it says Naaseh Adam B'tzalmenu? Good. So look at Rashi over there in the Chumash. I'm not going to go through it right now. Right, we have a daf, and I'd like to catch up. But look at Rashi in the Chumash over there, where he addresses this and he gives a pshat. And not just Rashi, there's also Ramban over there in Chumash as well. There are ways, obviously, to understand why the Torah says Naaseh. But again, just for a working translation of the Torah, Easeh. Next example. Vayichal b'yom. Now the pasuk says Vayichal elokim b'yom ha-shivi'i. When did Kadosh Baruch Hu finish doing Maisa Bracious? So simple shot on the pasuk because he finished on day seven. Finished on day seven. Hey, don't you Jews rest on day seven? What's going on? So Vayichal b'yom ha-shishi. Vayishbos b'yom ha-shivi'i. So as they give a working interpretation of the Torah, so their interpretation is, yeah, he finished on day six. Okay. Another example. This is number four. Zachar u'nekeva. The pasuk says Zachar u'nekeva baram, and they wrote Zachar u'nekeva birao. B'lashon Yachid. Again, same problem as above. See above. V'lo kasu baram. Another example. This is number five. So the pasuk says Hava nerda. Let us go down. V'nav u'nevavo sham sifasam. And we'll switch around all their languages. We'll confuse their languages. Okay. Megabavo. So again. The word nerda, let us go down. Again, go to Rashi and Chumash over there, you'll see. But meanwhile, over here, hava erda ve'ev lasham sfasam. So changing it from Lashon Rabim to Lashon Yachid. Okay. Sixth example. So the pasuk says, vatitzchak sarah bikirba lemor acharei blosi haisa liyana v'aduni zakein. So we have vatitzchak sarah bikirba. She laughed to herself. And now, Vatitzchak Sarah Bikroveha. Okay. And now their interpretation of the pasuk is that she laughed not Bikirba, Bikroveha. Now, what does that mean? So it means that she laughs amongst friends, amongst family. Okay. What do we gain by that? So Akash Baruch's response was a really, really, strong and he came out strong against Sarah. In the fact that she laughed. Now, if it's Bikurba, okay. So, in other words, so she wasn't challenging publicly. It was a private curiosity of what's going on over here. Like, there's no way I'm going to have a child. And meanwhile, Kadosh Baruch was like, she shouldn't have laughed. And what's going on over here? So to help Tommy understand a little bit better, so they interpreted not Bikurba but Bikroveha, meaning so that it was she publicly challenged. So now you understand why Kadosh Baruch was so upset. Okay. I'll ask the question. I'm not sure. I don't have the answer. I'll just ask the question. Meaning, are they doing this because they feel that this is a pshat? Are they doing this to help understanding? Meaning, that part I'm not sure about. I'm unclear. Here's the seventh example. So ki ba'pam hargu shor v'sonam ikru avos. Okay, the pasuk reads ki ba'pam hargu ish. And so an accusation by Yaakov as he's ending his life, and we just read this, last Shabbos, as he's ending his life and he's giving the brachas to the sons, so for Shimon and Levi, so he said that, you know, you guys are murderers. Okay. And right. And as we hear it, you know, in other words, wow, right? Did he just say that? Okay. But we understand, we accept. Meanwhile, it would be very hard for an outsider to hear Yaakov accusing his kids of being murderers. Okay, so kiva arpam hargu shor. Okay, not in other words, they didn't murder another person. Okay, here comes the eighth example. The pasuk reads vayikach Moshe ishtov es banav vayikavim al chamor. So as he goes back to Mitzrayim, so he takes his wife, he takes his kids, and he puts them on a donkey, and they translate vayikach Moshe ishtov es banav vayikavim al nose b'nei adam. Okay, and he puts them on an animal. But he doesn't say chamor. And tell me, if he were to read that, and he would read that, what's Moshe traveling on? A donkey? meaning the leader of the Jewish people is traveling on a donkey, right? The poor people travel on donkeys. Moshe's not traveling on a donkey. Okay, fine. He would have a really hard time accepting that. Next example. This is the ninth example. The pasuk says, "Moshe ben Yisrael asher yeshuv b'Mitzrayim shloshim shana v'arba me'ot shana." So when given a summary of how long we were in Egypt, 430 years. Now, if you go over the history, it's not 430 years. So you've already heard numerous times about how the numbers should be treated. Okay, what does it go back to? What does it date back to? 400 dates back to the birth of Yitzchak. We all know this, right? 430 dates back to Brisbane and Masarim. Okay, so forth and so on. Again, all this to be explained. So right now, what kind of translation are they going to give to that pasuk? So very simple. Moshe ben Yisrael asher yeshuv b'Mitzrayim v'shar aratzos arba me'ot shana. So the exile of not just Egypt, but other lands as well, 430. So the 430 is not just covering our years in Egypt, to cover the other exiles as well. Okay, fine. Next, the pasuk says, this is by Mamad Har Sinai, and this is the end of Sefer end of Parshas Mishpatim. Vayishlachas Na'arei B'nei Yisrael Vayalu. This is number 10. This is the 10th example. Vayishlachas Na'arei B'nei Yisrael Vayalu. Olos Vayizbechuz Vachim Shlamim LaHashem Parim. So Na'arei B'nei Yisrael. A simple reading would indicate that these are the kids who are offering karbanos. So Vayishlachas Zatute B'nei Yisrael. Okay, fine. So instead of Na'arei, they say Zatute, the dignitaries. Okay, and again, same adjustment, going from Nar to Zatute. Top of the Amud Beis. This is now going to be the 11th example. The pasuk says, "Vayichar leMoshe Maod, vayomar Hashem al Tefen el Minchasam, lo chamor echad mehem nasasi, v'lo hariose es echad mehem." Okay, so Moshe, as far as his displeasure with Korach v'Adaso. So he says, look, they have no gripes against me. I didn't take a single donkey from them. So the word chamor, how do they translate it? So lo chened echad mehem nasasi. I didn't take an item from them. Because if you read the pasuk kipshuto, I didn't take a donkey from them. Why is Moshe saying I didn't take a donkey? Oh, because he took other things. That's why. In other words, he skimmed off the top, just not donkeys. That's why he said donkey. Okay. By the way, I'm sure this registers, but a lot of connections with Moshe and Chamor. Okay, we just already saw a number of examples. But anyway, so the fine. So next example, the pasuk. This is in the beginning of Sefer Dvarim, right? Pentisai necha shemayim averisus Hashemesh v'sarech v'sakochavim kol tzva shemayim. Just reading the pasuk. V'nidachta v'shtachavis alehem v'avaratam asher chalak Hashem lokecha. Osam lechol ha'amim. Now, a literal translation of the pasuk would indicate that what did Akash Baruch Hu do? So he basically, you know what he did with the sun and stars? He gave them to the Goyim. Oh, and now it sounds like, oh wow, there's a koach in them, and he gave that koach over to the non-Jews. So no way they're going to translate it like that. So how are they going to translate it? Asher chalak Hashem lokecha osam lehair lechol ha'amim. No, it's not that the celestial bodies have any kind of koach whatsoever. That's not the pshat. The pshat is that he just gave them to provide illumination for the goyim. That's the pshat. Okay, this is now going to be, that was number 12. Here comes the 13th example. So the pasuk says, Vayelech vayavod Elohim acherim, v'yishtachu lahem, v'lashemesh o liyarech, o lechol tzva shemayim, asher lo tzivisi. So now how are they going to translate? Vayelech vayavod Elohim acherim asher lo tzivisi la'ovdam. I command you not to worship them. Meaning the pasuk kipshuta would indicate that I commanded you vayavod Elohim acherim vayishchuv lahem. So l'shem l'yarech o l'chol tzva shemayim asher lo tzivisi. Asher lo tzivisi, where I did not command you to, I did not command them. Meaning it sounds like, again, there's some sort of koach to them. And again, they sidestep that by just simply saying, I commanded them, meaning the non-Jews, not to worship them, these entities, these celestial bodies. For an example, number 14, v'chasvu lo et si'iras haraglayim. So a description of the arneves, right? In modern Hebrew, it's translated as a rabbit. But anyway, in v'lo chasvu lo es ha'arneves. So when going over the non-kosher animals, so four of the non-kosher animals has simen echad. meaning the Torah gives us simanim for kosher animals. They have to have split hooves and chew their cud. And for four animals, so they have one of the simanim. The chazir has split hooves but doesn't chew its cud. And three other animals have chew their cud but do not have split hooves. Camel and two types of rabbits, right? The shafan and the arnevis. Anyway, so when they got to arnevis, so they didn't write arnevis, but what they wrote is tsi'iras raglayim. You know, the animal with short legs. Oh, okay, good. So, and why? Mimnei she'ishto shel tamei arnevis shema. Shelo yomar sach gubi ayudim ve'itilu she'mishri b'torah. And it was political. His wife's name was Arnevis. And if they write, they write. Right, very good, and so very good, and so if they wrote that name, and so they would think that okay, we're just making fun. All right, so what's the okay? So good. So for political purposes, they changed that as well. Okay, so the Gemara goes over the incident with Tamai and the translation of the Torah into Greek. Now, It's not in any given order. Right, this last one is right. We jump from Devarim back to Vayikra. Right, excellent observation. Yeah. Okay. All right, good. Rishimon Gamliel Omer. I'm sorry. Period. Okay. I know we have a little bit to finish before we get to the Mishnah. Comes out now that so from the standpoint of Rishimon Gamliel, let's just recap because that was a long aside. So Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says that the Torah could be translated into Greek. And according to Rav Yehuda, that's only a reference to the Sefer Torah, not to the other Sfarim of Tanakh, not for Nevi'im, not for Ksuvim. And the reason why is because of this episode. This episode gives an allowance to for the Sefer Torah to be translated into Greek. Okay. The Hashkafa over here is that this was not a happy day. In fact, this was a very sad day. Even though we just learned together that a nace occurred in order for this event to happen. But nevertheless, amongst Tanesim that are not popular, just simply means most people don't know about it. So it's in Megillas Tanis. It's actually recorded in the Shulchan Aruch. So it notes that there are other fast days that we don't commemorate nowadays. So for example, the eighth day of Teves, right? This is in Shulchan Aruch. So the eighth day of Teves is a Tanis. It's a fast day. Why? So so we have a Mesorah. It's in Megillas Tanis. That what was the eighth day of Tanis, the eighth day of Teves? It was this day. In other words, it was the day that the Torah was translated. And it basically, it turns into a public fast day. Meaning, this is not viewed as a good thing. It's not viewed as a positive thing. Generally speaking, when they took the Torah, now they gave it a singular translation. And as we just saw together, 14 examples where they had to finesse a number of the psukim, and we lose the Torah Shebaal Peh aspect of it, so it's not viewed as a good thing, right? The I don't have it in front of me right now, so I'm paraphrasing. And but the Medrash says that the world went into darkness when this happened, meaning the translation, yeah, 3 days. Right, 3 days of darkness, right? The translation did the opposite of illuminating; it darkened. Okay, anyway, the Megillas Tanis has the eighth day, ninth, and tenth day of Tevis all being fast days. Okay, anyway, yeah, okay. So, but it's just important to note, and it's noted. Okay, next, Rav Shimon Gamliel, Omer Apitzraim Lo Itir Shiktivu Al Yivanith. Amar Rabbi Abba, Amar Rav Yochanan, Lachik Rav Shimon Gamliel. So the Gemara now wraps up our whole discussion. So in the Mishnah, we know it's a machlokus between the Tanakama and the Rashbag. Tanakam allows for him to be written in all languages. Rashbag says only Greek. The Gemara says Allah is like the Rashbag. The Amar of Yochanan my time to Rishim and Gamliel. Amakra. Yaftalukim liyefes v'yishkan ba'o aleishem. So in Parashas Noach. So the brachas that Noach gives to his son. So Yaftalukim liyefes. Beauty is going to be given to Yefes and going to be dwelling in the tents of shame. So we are obviously progeny of shame and Greek is the progeny of Yefes. So, Dvar Shal Yefes, Yubo Leshem, which means that a Greek is allowed within Yiddishkeit, and specifically, the Greek language can be used in order to write the Sefer Torah. That's the drasha for the Rashbag. So, Ve'ema Gomer Magog, the Gemara says, wait 1 second. In other words, Yefes has a lot of different progeny. There are a lot of branches that come off of Yefes. How do we know that's Yavanis? So the Gemara says, "I'm Rabbi Chiya Baraba. I know time up. Dichsev Yaftalokim liyefes. If you so shall yefes, yea, but all lay shame. No, it's the most beautiful. Yaf you so. So that and only that is going to be, but all lay shame. Okay. So and the Gemara's assumption, of course, is that we're referring to Greek. All right, I wanted to catch up. Okay, we did good. We'll stop over here. Tomorrow we'll talk about the Kohen Mashiach, Mashiach Mechama. We'll move on. It would require a whole introduction, a new topic. Okay, let's quickly recap. Okay, we covered really two main topics for today. First one, Mitzar Muchlat versus Mitzar Musgar. The differences between them, the similarities between them, the drushas that get us to the differences and similarities. That was topic number one. Topic number two is the writing of Sfarim. So the writing of Sfarim, according to our Mishnah, can be done b'chol lashon, can be written in any language. That's our Mishnah. The Mishnah also brings in the Shita of the Rashbag, which is that, no, that when it comes to Sfarim, it can only be written in outside of Lashon HaKadosh, can only be written in Greek and no other language. Good. A machlokus in our Mishnah. But even after that, the Braisa is quoted on the bottom of Chesam and Beis. The Braisa says that a Sfarim can only be written in Ksav Ashuris, in Lashon HaKodesh, and that's it. And so now, how do I resolve the difference between the Mishnah and the Braisa? So when all is said and done, I'm saying this as a summary statement, so there really are two Mahalchim that the Gemara accepted. One Mahalach is that the Braisa is talking about Megillas Esther. Okay? And again, I already highlighted this morning, but now as a summary, it seems to be a strange conclusion that the Megillas Esther of all the Sfarim, that can only be written as is. The Gemara had a drasha, but when it comes to all of the Sfarim can be written b'chol lashon, can be written in other languages. That's one mahalach. And the Gemara's second mahalach is that the Braisa is talking about a Sefer Torah according to the Rashbag as understood by Rabbi Yehuda, which is that the Rashbag says that Sefer Torah can be written in Greek, but according to Rabbi Yehuda, that's only for a Sefer Torah, not for other Sfarim. So that means to say that when the Braisa says that it can only be written in Lashon HaKodesh and no other language, not even Greek, it's talking about Nevi'im and Ksuvim according to the Rashbag as presented by Rabbi Yehuda. And obviously the Mishnah is not going like the Rashbag. Okay, that's the second Mahalach of the Gemara in terms of how to deal with it. And then the Gemara says, according to Rabbi Yehuda's version of the Rashbag, why can a Sefer Torah be written in Greek? Because of the episode of the Septuagint of Tami HaMelech. Good. And then what we did in today's daf is that we went over 14 different examples in the Chumash where they had to work on a translation, a working translation, so that when Tami reads the translation, so he'll have a better understanding of the Torah, so that he won't be offended. There were a number of considerations taken into the various interpretations that they gave. And finally, the Gemara concluded that the halach is like the Rashbag, that it can only be written in Greek and no other language. And the Gemara gave us a drasha in terms of understanding Shitas Rashbag.